9. Day 20 turned into day 21. News filtered through to Svetlana via Parry. Janus had continued its obliging deceleration. In response, Bella had throttled the engine back to 0.1 g. Rockhopper was now making its final approach to their initial study position, 10,000 kilometers astern of Janus. If the former moon's decelerating trend continued, it would soon be moving at constant velocity. The plan was to hold station at 10,000 kilometers for a day, then move in closer, to within 1,000 kilometers of the surface. If Janus tolerated that, they would move closer still. By the third day of the five-day encounter, robots and unmanned autonomous vehicles would land on the artifact. If the robots and UAVs were permitted access, then people would follow. On day 4, they would limit themselves to passive surface investigations. If that went well, then on day 5, they would attempt to secure a physical sample of the machinery. They'd begin with microscopic scrapings and return each sample to Rockhopper, which by then would be standing off at a safe distance. If those small sample collections were successful, they would increase to larger specimens. On day 6, Rockhopper would depart, and Janus would fall away into the night on its long ride to Spica. There was still no news from home. The technical team had been working on the problem for 19 hours, but, so Svetlana's informant told her, nothing they had done had shed any light on the problem. Parry passed her a flexi. Bella's beginning to stew. If she wasn't, she'd never have agreed to this.
She wants me to take a look at it.
She says that if you can find something, that would be good. As Svetlana's hands moved over the hide-like skin of the display, she tumbled through shipnet layers without obstruction.
How long is she giving me?
As long as it takes, Parry said. There's a technical note in your inbox. Everything they've tried so far. It may give you a head start. There's no point trying to slow or stop the ship, Bella says. As soon as you go anywhere near critical systems, they'll lock you out.
Who led this repair team?
Belinda Pegas and Meng Cheng Yang. They've been working around the clock. She nodded, for those were the names she would have penciled in for the repair duty.
Did anyone EVA?
No. Too dangerous under thrust, given the location of the antenna. I wouldn't sign off one of my people to go outside, put it like that.
She had expected as much. Robots?
We've already had Jens Fletterich look at it with one of the free flyer remotes. There's a video clip in the tech note. Doesn't seem to be any external damage to the antenna. No blown servos. But maybe you'll see something everyone's missed.
I'll look at it, she said dubiously. Is Jens still on shift?
Parry glanced at his big multi-dialed diver's watch. I don't think so. Should be catching up on some sleep now.
Why?
I'd like to talk to Jens, or anyone in Sol's robotics team.
That'll have to go through Bella, I'm afraid.
What are you thinking?
Something we should try, she said.
Janus loomed as large in Rockhopper's sky as a full moon seen from the Earth, a bright clenched fist, peppered with tiny islands of ice amidst seas of dark, glinting mechanism. Rockhopper was unspeakably close to it now, a mere 20,000 kilometers from the object's machine-clotted surface. Soon they would halve that distance and come to a watchful halt relative to the moon. There had been no hint of a reaction from the alien thing, no warning to keep their distance. Equally, beyond the fact of the moon slowing, there had been no invitation to come closer either. Bella finished a cigarette as the nurse arrived with Svetlana. There was no physical contact between Svetlana and the nurse, but Judy Sugimoto never strayed more than a meter from her charge. Discreetly, but not so discreetly that Svetlana wouldn't have been aware of it, Sugimoto carried a sedative syringe, ready to be jabbed into the other woman's arm if she turned difficult.
You didn't have to go to all this trouble, Svetlana said. We could have met at my place.
If I could have kept this to just the two of us, perhaps that might have worked, Bella said. Obviously, that wasn't an option. Craig Schrope clicked his pen. He sat behind Bella's desk, leaning back in the seat. Parry said you might have an angle on the uplink issue.
I asked to see Saul Regis.
Saul's on his way. In the meantime, we'd like to know why you think he can help. We've already had a robot look the thing over, and there's no sign of damage. Diagnostic software hasn't flagged any mechanical issues. He fingered his clean-shaven jaw. "So what's the deal, Barsegian? Can a robot help us, or have you just cooked up some new scheme to sabotage the mission?" He said her surname with exaggerated care, as if everyone else in the world mispronounced it. Svetlana took an angry step closer to Shrop. "I'm trying to help here, you sanctimonious prick."
"Easy," Shrop said, snapping his fingers at Judy Sugimoto.
The nurse took gentle hold of Svetlana and pulled her back, bewildered but obedient. "I appreciate that you offered to look into this," Bella said, choosing her words diplomatically. "I removed you from duty and placed you under arrest. At that point, your obligations to me ended."
"Where is this going?" Svetlana asked.
"I'm just saying. You've never disappointed me. No matter what happens to us, I'm still proud that we were friends. I'd like to think that one day we might be able to put..."
"Did you look at the video feed?" Shrope asked Svetlana, cutting across Bella.
"Yes."
"Did you see anything wrong with the uplink system?"
"Nothing,"
Svetlana said, speaking to Bella rather than Shrope. "The system looks okay inside and out. That's why I wanted to bring in Saul. I had another idea. Something we should at least rule out."
"Go on," Craig Shrope said.
But Bella spoke before Svetlana had a chance. "According to Parry, you wanted to talk to Saul about the feasibility of dropping a free flyer behind the ship, possibly to a distance where we'd run a risk of losing the flyer. Is that the case?"
"It wouldn't have to be a robot if we could instrument a package and send it back instead, but the robot would be quicker."
"What are you worried about?"
"I'll tell you," Svetlana said, "but I want to negotiate first."
Shrope nodded curtly at Sugimoto. "Take her away. I've had enough."
Sugimoto was moving apologetically towards Svetlana when Bella raised a hand.
"I can't let you go free. You know that much.
I know you won't turn this ship around either. Not until you've had a closer look at Janus. So I'll work with what's on the table. I'll help you with the uplink if you agree to something else."
Bella waited. She made a little inviting gesture with her hand.
"I'm listening."
"You cut down the time at Janus from 5 days to one. We spend only 24 hours at the initial study point."
"Completely unacceptable," Shrope said.
"Hear me out," Svetlana said. "What I'm proposing will still give you solid science. Even if you don't put people down on Janus, you can still send robots. It doesn't matter if we abandon them there. We can keep teleoperating them until we reach an unworkable time lag, and even then we can still upload command sequences. They can carry on exploring Janus while we're on our way home."
"That was always the plan," Shrope said. "You're not giving us anything we didn't already have."
"I'm giving you an uplink."
"If you can fix it. From where I'm sitting, this looks like a bluff."
"I can't do what you're asking," Bella said, shaking her head. "I can't come all this way, representing the entire human species, and then say that we decided to turn tail as soon as we arrived."
"I'm talking about 24 hours, Bella. That's still a lot of time. Throw some of that caution away, and I'm sure you can still achieve most of the objectives."
"Look at the damn thing," Bella said, gesturing to the image of Janus. "Look at that and tell me it's going to take anything less than a century to do it justice."
"Then 5 days won't be enough either," Svetlana said reasonably. "Given that, the difference between 1 and 5 doesn't seem so bad."
Bella closed her eyes, wondering how things had ever come to this. She wanted to be able to walk out of her office, take a holiday, and then return to this precise moment in the conversation, only this time sharpened like a new tool.
"I can give you something," she said, "but not everything you want. I'll concede to 3 days at Janus."
"Still unacceptable," Shrope said.
"For the first time in my life, I agree with Craig," Svetlana said, with what sounded like genuine regret. "3 days is too long."
"That's my final offer," Bella said.
There was a knock at the door. Saul Regis entered and studied the room's occupants with his usual reptilian equanimity, betraying neither surprise nor particular interest.
"You had a shot at redeeming yourself," Shrope told Svetlana. "You blew it, but it doesn't matter. I think I know what you have in mind."
"Svetlana," Bella said, "please. I'm giving you one last chance. Help us. Help us, and then maybe we can talk again."
"Sorry," she answered. "Cast iron guarantees up front. That's the only thing I'll settle for."
Schrope clapped his hands together. Okay, looks like we're about done here. Saul, can you spare a free flyer? I'll bet money that Svetlana's idea was to drop a robot behind the ship, carrying a radio transmitter configured to match the output frequency and strength of the Earth uplink signal. Am I right? He looked at her for a moment, then turned back to Regis. She thinks the uplink antenna might be working fine, but that there might be a problem with the signal.
What kind of problem? Bella asked, instinctively directing the question to Svetlana.
Svetlana, to her surprise, answered. Perhaps she realized she had nothing to gain from silence.
The uplink system is working normally, she said, sounding defeated. The problem isn't at our end.
Earth has a problem?
That's the idea, Schrope said, but we don't know for sure until we test it. Bella shook her head, unable to accept that this was the answer. Earth has gone off air before, she said, but only for minutes at a time when they have a problem with the alignment. This has been going on for 23 hours now.
Schrope shrugged. So it's more than a glitch.
Surely they'd have locked a backup dish onto us by now. If they know there's a problem, maybe everything looks fine at their end. We're 13 hours out now. We've been sending error signals back to Earth ever since we lost the feed, but even if they got those messages and acted on them immediately, we won't know about it for another 3 hours. Bella absorbed the information, mentally conjuring up a picture of the system's web of radio transmissions. Telecommunications around the sun were pushed to the limit of data-crammed efficiency, which meant high-power signals squeezed into tight, pencil-thin beams between designated senders and receivers. Only one transmitter had been assigned to Rockhopper, and that beam carried every byte of information uploaded to the ship, from personal plain text messages to the flood of data from the global news networks. Rockhopper was too far out to intercept any other communications, unless they were deliberately aimed at the ship.
There's nothing else we can tap into? Bella asked. No omnidirectional signals?
Too faint, Schrope said. All the catalogued beacons are too far away for us to pick up at this range.
All of them? What about the beacon we left behind? The one we tagged on the mass driver we were going to use on the last comet?
It's a long way behind us now.
But closer than anything else. Did anyone remember to check the beacon?
I'll refer it to the technical team, Schrope said.
You still want my free flyer? Asked Saul Regis, his voice characteristically slow and somnambulant.
As soon as you can prepare it, Bella said. I want it rigged to match the output frequency and strength of the Earth uplink. Make sure you adjust for Doppler shift, of course.
Of course, Saul Regis said laconically.
Trivial?
Very. I can have the free flyer outside in an hour.
Do it, Bella said, and then maybe we'll get somewhere. I don't like being cut off for this long. It makes me nervous.
Then she turned back to Svetlana. I'm sorry. I'd like to have worked something out. But you had your chance.
So did you, Svetlana said.
Bella watched as the three robotics technicians completed their preparations. Jens Fletterich and Eva Hinks stood next to each other in the cargo airlock, comparing readouts on their flexies, linked by data spools to ports in the robot's chrome-yellow tubular chassis. Saul Regis stood behind his two team members, saying nothing but watching everything with narrow-eyed intensity, ready to intervene if he saw one of them make a mistake. They all had the slightly unnatural postures of people standing up under weightless conditions, glued to the floor by their shoes. Calling the cupboard-sized thing a robot was something of a stretch, Bella thought. The free flyer was mostly fuel tank, feeding a tiny nuclear-assisted gimbaled rocket motor. At a quarter of a G, the free flyer could shadow Rockhopper for 6 hours before it needed refueling. That wouldn't be an issue now. Having reached the initial study point, the ship was in freefall, apart from the small amount of thrust required to hold itself at a constant distance from Janus. But the technical team assured Bella that the free flyer would need to reach a significant distance behind Rockhopper before its own radio emissions could be considered a realistic approximation to the uplink signal. Bella didn't want to wait for the robot to crawl out to that distance on a fuel-conserving cruise. Regis turned back to her.
We'll go. It took a bit longer than I was expecting.
We had to load new software to allow for the expected time lag at the end of the burn. Bella looked at her watch. By her estimate, Regis was within a minute of his promised delivery time. You understand you won't be getting this machine back? I mean, if there's anything valuable aboard it. We've stripped it of everything it doesn't need for this one mission, Regis said, directing her attention to a tiny cluster of processor boards floating at eye level next to Hinks. You still want to go ahead with this, right? We haven't had any luck picking up the omnidirectional transmitters, Bella said. Doesn't that mean there has to be a problem at our end after all? Not necessarily. The detection probabilities were already marginal, and we might not be looking in exactly the right direction, or the beacons might have failed, or someone else might have claim-jumped our property. I admit it's a little puzzling, but that's why we need to run this experiment as well. In 5 minutes they had cleared and depressurized the airlock so that the wide outer door could be opened to space. Fletterick had strapped himself into a teleoperations couch in the puppet booth and was already lifting the free flyer from its pallet, using microbursts from its chemical steering thrusters. Flexies on the wall showed cam images of the free flyer from different angles, as it turned its long axis through an arc of 90 degrees. Above the drone of pumps, Bella heard Fletterick say, "Hold!" He flipped the visor of the immersion headset. "She checks out okay. Star trackers are offline, but we should be able to rely on the inertial gyro." "Star trackers are down?" Bella asked. "Hinks the Jinx must have removed the wrong board." "Hey, don't blame me," she said. "I removed exactly what we agreed to remove." "We can live without the star trackers," Bella said. "Just get her on a solid gyro heading and fire up the main rocket." Fletterick lowered the visor again and returned to the telepresence realm of the robot. "Resume," he said, and began delivering another series of clearly enunciated verbal commands. The cams showed the robot drifting to a safe distance from Rockhopper before engaging its main rocket. It fell rapidly away at 1G, as if it had been dropped from a tall building on Earth. The nuclear rocket would burn for 90 minutes before exhausting its fuel, and by then the free flyer would have put half a light second between itself and Rockhopper, more than a second of time lag for its telepresence operator. It would have achieved a terminal speed of more than 50 kilometers per second relative to its current motion. That sounded fast, and by any sane measure it was, but Rockhopper and the alien machine it shadowed were both moving 18 times faster than that. When it finished its burn, the free flyer would still be moving with them into interstellar space, just a bit slower. It would still be headed for Spiker. Bella returned to her quarters in the centrifuge section and waited for news. She potted with her fish. After 10 minutes, she learned that the uplink antenna aboard Rockhopper was successfully receiving the test signal from the free flyer. Nothing about the detection revealed any anomalies. Earth was still silent. After 30 minutes, she called Belinda Pegas. The woman looked exhausted. "It's only telling us what we already knew," she said. "The antenna's working fine. Every single test has confirmed that." "But you can't test the sensitivity at the low end," Bella said, fingering a hard copy of the earlier technical note, "not without something like the free flyer." "Agreed, but we've no reason to assume a problem with the sensitivity, and the uplink signal should be well above our noise limit." "Then there must be extra noise leaking in from somewhere." Bella glared at the technical note. It swam in and out of focus like a fish underwater. "Have you looked at the cooling system on the preamplifier box?" "Yes," Pegas said with a heavy sigh. "In fact, that was about the first thing we looked at. Sorry, just trying to make helpful suggestions." "It was helpful," Pegas said, with something like contrition. "It's just that we've already gone through all the obvious stuff." "Keep trying," Bella said. "At least in half an hour we'll know if the sensitivity is the issue. That'll help, won't it?" "I guess," Pegas said, unenthusiastically. Bella let her get on with her work. The next 30 minutes oozed past, the passage of time made slower by the regular notifications that probe and ship were still in contact, but with the signal becoming slowly fainter. The falling away of the signal strength was exactly as predicted, with no loss in detection efficiency due to some antenna fault. Bella reminded herself that she still had a ship to run, and that Janus was still sitting there waiting to be examined. Her inbox contained a dozen messages from Nick Thale, each of which, as she skimmed them quickly, contained updating summaries of the latest remote sensing operations. By contrast to the uplink, the equipment under Nick's guidance was all working normally. Thale's most recent message requested Bella's formal permission to launch a free flyer on a pseudo-orbit that would take it around the far side of Janus, observing the as-yet-unseen bow face. Bella authorized it without hesitation. The technical aspects of the mission had already been covered, and the flyer would not be approaching any closer to Janus than Rockhopper had already come. There would be no additional risk. With 5 minutes left until Fletterick's free flyer had reached its terminal velocity, Bella decided she could no longer stand the wait. She called Pegasus again and asked her to meet her at the puppet booth. Jens Fletterick was still in the couch, barely moving. Every now and then he whispered some arcane command to his machine. Time lag was now appreciable. "Here's something odd," said Hinks, holding a Ziploc plastic bag in which she had gathered the free flyer's spare processor boards. "That Star Tracker glitch Jens tried to pin on me." Bella blinked back to an hour earlier. "Yes," she said with an ominous sense of premonition. "We've got a similar problem with the flyer you just authorized Nick Thale to launch. I never went anywhere near the Star Tracker boards on that machine. Doesn't make any sense." Hinks nodded. "Added to the pile." "Wait," Bella said. "We have to clear this up. One Star Tracker failure I can understand, but two? In completely isolated machines?" Hinks looked at Bella with a dawning comprehension. "You think the two things might be connected?" "I don't know what I..." But Bella halted, looking at Jens Fletterick. He'd flipped up his visor. "The free flyer has reached terminal velocity," Fletterick said. "All systems are functioning normally, including the uplink antenna." Bella looked to Pegasus for confirmation. Pegasus had a stiffened flexi across her forearm, hectic with sketchy hand-annotated diagrams in primary colors. "Still reading you," she said. "Signals on the nose, too. It's exactly where it should be. Doppler's flattened out now that the machine isn't accelerating." "And this represents the strength of the uplink signal from Earth, if they were sending?" Bella asked. "Within a few percent of the modulated average." "Then our system must be good," Bella said. Pegasus nodded meekly. "We'll continue to collect data as the free flyer falls away from us at terminal velocity, but I don't think it's going to tell us much we don't already know. Keep listening anyway." "Is it me?" Hinks said. "Or is this beginning to make no sense at all?" "It's not you," Bella said.